Newton Media Group, a family of creative services, presents the Voice Over Work podcast. On the podcast today, we take a little deeper look into a book introduced in a previous podcast with a chapter-by-chapter look at The Discourses of Epictetus by Epictetus, narrated by Russell Newton. Or Chapter 1, About Freedom. He is free who lives as he wishes to live, who is neither subject to compulsion, nor to hindrance, nor to force, whose movements to action are not impeded, whose desires attain their purpose, and who does not fall into that which he would avoid. Who then chooses to live in error? No man. Who chooses to live deceived, liable to mistake, unjust, unrestrained, discontented, mean? No man. Not one, then, of the bad lives as he wishes, nor is he then free. And who chooses to live in sorrow, fear, envy, pity, desiring and failing in his desires, attempting to avoid something and falling into it? Not one. Do we then find any of the bad free from sorrow, free from fear, who does not fall into that which he would avoid, and does not obtain that which he wishes? Not one. Nor, then, do we find any bad men free. If, then, a man who has been twice consul should hear this, if you add, "But you are a wise man, this is nothing to you," he will pardon you. But if you tell him the truth and say, "You differ not at all from those who have been thrice sold as to being yourself not a slave," what else ought you to expect than blows? For he says, "What, I a slave? I, whose father was free? Whose mother was free? I, whom no man can purchase? I am also of senatorial rank, and a friend of Caesar, and I have been a consul, and I own many slaves." In the first place, most excellent senatorial man, perhaps your father also was a slave in the same kind of servitude, and your mother and your grandfather. Chapter 2, On Familiar Intimacy. To this matter before, all you must attend, that you be never so closely connected with any of your former intimates or friends as to come down to the same acts as he does. If you do not observe this rule, you will ruin yourself. But if the thought arises in your mind, "I shall seem disobliging to him, and he will not have the same feeling toward me," remember that nothing is done without cost, nor is it possible for a man, if he does not do the same, to be the same man that he was. Choose, then, which of the two you will have, to be equally loved by those by whom you were formerly loved, being the same with your former self, or, being superior, not to obtain from your friends the same that you did before. For if this is better, turn away to it, and let not other considerations draw you in a different direction, for no man is able to make progress when he is wavering between opposite things. But if you have preferred this to all things, if you choose to attend to this only, to work out this only, give up everything else. But if you will not do this, your wavering will produce both these results. You will neither improve as you ought, nor will you obtain what you formerly obtained. For before, by plainly desiring the things which were worth nothing, you pleased your associates. But you cannot excel in both kinds, and it is necessary that, so far as you share in the one, you must fall short in the other. You cannot, when you do not drink with those with whom you used to drink, be agreeable to them as you were before. Choose, then, whether you will be a hard drinker and pleasant to your former associates, or a sober man and disagreeable to them. You cannot, when you do not sing with those with whom you used to sing, be equally loved by them. Chapter 3. What Things We Should Exchange for Other Things. Keep this thought in readiness, when you lose anything external, what you acquire in place of it. And if it be worth more, never say, "I have had a loss." Neither if you've got a horse in place of an ass, or an ox in place of a sheep, nor a good action in place of a bit of money, nor in place of idle talk, such tranquility as befits a man, nor in place of lewd talk, if you have acquired modesty. If you remember this, you will always maintain your character such as it ought to be. But if you do not, Consider that the times of opportunity are perishing, and that whatever pains you take about yourself, you are going to waste them all and overturn them. And it needs only a few things for the loss and overturning of all, namely, a small deviation from reason. For the steerer of a ship to upset it, he has no need of the same means as he has need of for saving it. But if he turns it a little to the wind, it is lost. And if he does not do this purposely, but has been neglecting his duty a little, the ship is lost. Something of the kind happens in this case also. If you only fall to nodding a little, all that you have up to this time collected is gone. Attend, therefore, to the appearance of things, and watch over them. For that which you have to preserve is no small matter, but it is modesty and fidelity and constancy, freedom from the affects, a state of mind undisturbed, freedom from fear, tranquility, in a word, liberty. For what will you sell these things? See what is the value of the things which you will obtain in exchange for these. But shall I not obtain any such thing for it? See, and if you do in return get that, see what you receive in place of it. I possess Chapter 4. To those who are desirous of passing life in tranquility. Remember that not only the desire of power and of riches makes us mean and subject to others, but even the desire of tranquility and of leisure and of traveling abroad and of learning. For, to speak plainly, whatever the external thing may be, the value which we set upon it places us in subjection to others. What then is the difference between desiring to be a senator or not desiring to be one? What is the difference between desiring power or being content with a private station? What is the difference between saying, I am unhappy, I have nothing to do, but I am bound to my books as a corpse, or saying, I am unhappy, I have no leisure for reading? For as salutations and power are things external and independent of the will, so is a book. For what purpose do you choose to read? Tell me, for if you only direct your purpose to being amused or learning something, you are a silly fellow and incapable of enduring labor. But if you refer reading to the proper end, what else is this than a tranquil and happy life? But if reading does not secure for you a happy and tranquil life, what is the use of it? But it does secure this, the man replies, and for this reason I am vexed that I am deprived of it. And what is this tranquil and happy life, which any man can impede? I do not say Caesar or Caesar's friend, but a crow, a piper, a fever, and 30,000 other things. But a tranquil and happy life contains nothing so sure is continuity and freedom from obstacle. Now I am called to do something. I will go, then, with the purpose of observing the measures which I must keep, of acting with modesty, steadiness. Chapter 5. Against the Quarrelsome and Ferocious. The wise and good man neither himself fights with any person, nor does he allow another, so far as he can prevent it. And an example of this, as well as of all other things, is proposed to us in the life of Socrates, who not only himself on all occasions avoided fights, but would not allow even others to quarrel. See in Xenophon's Symposium how many quarrels he settled, how further he endured Thrasymachus and Pallas and Callicles, how he tolerated his wife, and how he tolerated his son who attempted to confute him and to cavil with him. For he remembered well that no man has in his power another man's ruling principle. He wished, therefore, nothing else than that which was his own. And what is this? Not that this or that man may act according to nature, for that is a thing which belongs to another, but that while others are doing their own acts as they choose, he may nevertheless be in a condition conformable to nature and live in it, only doing what is his own, to the end that others also may be in a state conformable to nature. For this is the object always set before him by the wise and good man. Is it to be the commander of an army? No, but if it is permitted him, his object is in this matter to maintain his own ruling principle. Is it to marry? No, but if marriage is allowed to him, In this manner, his object is to maintain himself in a condition conformable to nature. But if he would have his son not to do wrong, or his wife, he would have what belongs to another not to belong to another. And to be instructed is this, to learn what things are a man's own and what belongs to another. Chapter 6. Against those who lament over being pitied. I am grieved, a man says, at being pitied. Whether then is the fact of your being pitied a thing which concerns you or those who pity you? Well, is it in your power to stop this pity? It is in my power if I show them that I do not require pity. And whether then are you in the condition of not deserving pity, or are you not in that condition? I think I am not. But these persons do not pity me for the things for which, if they ought to pity me, it would be proper, I mean, for my faults. But they pity me for my poverty, for not possessing honorable offices, for diseases and deaths and other such things. Whether then are you prepared to convince the many that not one of these things is an evil, but that it is possible for a man who is poor and has no office and enjoys no honor to be happy, or to show yourself to them as rich and in power? For the second of these things belong to a man who is boastful, silly, and good for nothing. And consider by what means the pretense must be supported. It will be necessary for you to hire slaves, and to possess a few silver vessels, and to exhibit them in public, if it is possible, though they are often the same, and to attempt to conceal the fact that they are the same, and to have splendid garments and all other things for display, and to show that you are a man honored by the great, and to try to sup at their houses, or to be supposed to sup there, and, as to your person, to employ some mean arts, that you may appear to be more handsome and nobler than you are. These things you must contrive, if you choose to go by the second path, in order not to be pitied. But the first way is both impracticable and long, to attempt the very thing which Zeus has not. Chapter 7. On Freedom from Fear. What makes the tyrant formidable? The guards, you say, and their swords, and the men of the bedchamber, and those who exclude them who would enter. Why then, if you bring a boy to the tyrant when he is with his guards, is he not afraid? Or is it because the child does not understand these things? If then any man does understand what guards are and that they have swords, and comes to the tyrant for this very purpose, because he wishes to die on account of some circumstance, and seeks to die easily by the hand of another, is he afraid of the guards? No, for he wishes for the thing which makes the guards formidable. If then neither any man wishing to die nor to live by all means, but only as it may be permitted, approaches the tyrant, what hinders him from approaching the tyrant without fear? Nothing. If then a man has the same opinion about his property as the man whom I have instanced has about his body, and also about his children and his wife, and, in a word, is so affected by some madness or despair that he cares not whether he possesses them or not, but, like children who are playing with shells, care about the play, but do not trouble themselves about the shells, so he too has set no value on the materials, but values the pleasure that he has with them and the occupation. What tyrant is then formidable to him, or what guards or what swords? Then, through madness, is it possible for a man to be so disposed toward these things, and the Galileans through habit? And is it possible that no man can learn from reason and from demonstration that God has made all the things in the universe, and the universe itself, completely free from hindrance and perfect, and the parts of it for the use of the whole? All other animals, indeed, are in... Chapter 8. Against those who hastily rush into the use of the philosophic dress. Neither praise nor blame a man because of the things which are common, and do not ascribe to him any skill or want of skill, and thus you will be free from rashness and from malevolence. This man bathes very quickly. Does he then do wrong? Certainly not. But what does he do? He bathes very quickly. Are all things then done well? By no means. But the acts which proceed from right opinions are done well, and those which proceed from bad opinions are done ill. But do you, until you know the opinion from which a man does each thing, neither praise nor blame the act. But the opinion is not easily discovered from the external things. This man is a carpenter. Why? Because he uses an axe. What then is this to the matter? This man is a musician because he sings. And what does that signify? This man is a philosopher because he wears a cloak and long hair. And what does a juggler wear? For this reason, if a man sees any philosopher acting indecently, immediately he says, "See what the philosopher is doing." But he ought, because of the man's indecent behavior, rather, to say that he is not a philosopher. For if this is the preconceived notion of a philosopher and what he professes, to wear a cloak and long hair, men would say well. But if what he professes is this, rather, to keep himself free from faults, why do we not rather, because he does not make good his professions, take from him the name of philosopher? For so we do in the case of all other arts. When a man sees another handling an axe badly, he does not say, "What is the use of the carpenter's art?" Chapter 9. To a person who had been changed to a character of shamelessness. When you see another man in the possession of power, set against this the fact that you have not the want of power. When you see another rich, see what you possess in place of riches. For if you possess nothing in place of them, you are miserable. But if you have not the want of riches, know that you possess more than this man possesses, and what is worth much more. Another man possesses a handsome woman. You have the satisfaction of not desiring a handsome wife. Do these things appear to you to be small? And how much would these persons give, these very men who are rich and in possession of power, and live with handsome women, to be able to despise riches and power, and these very women whom they love and enjoy? Do you not know, then, what is the thirst of a man who has a fever? He possesses that which is in no degree like the thirst of a man who is in health. For the man who is in health ceases to be thirsty after he has drunk, but the sick man, being pleased for a short time, has a nausea. He converts the drink into bile, vomits, is griped, and more thirsty. It is such a thing to have desire of riches and to possess riches, desires of power and to possess power, desire of a beautiful woman and to sleep with her. To this is added jealousy, fear of being deprived of the thing which you love, indecent words, indecent thoughts, unseemly acts. And what do I lose? You will say. My man, you were modest, and you are so no longer. Have you lost nothing? In place of Chrysippus and Zeno, you read Aristides and Evenus. Have you lost nothing? In place of Socrates and Diogenes, you admire him who is able to corrupt and seduce most women. You wish to appear handsome. Chapter 10. What things we ought to despise and what things we ought to value. The difficulties of all men are about external things. Their helplessness is about externals. What shall I do? How will it be? How will it turn out? Will this happen? Will that? All these are the words of those who are turning themselves to things which are not within the power of the will. For who says, "How shall I not assent to that which is false? How shall I not turn away from the truth?" If a man be of such a good disposition as to be anxious about these things, I will remind him of this. Why are you anxious? The thing is in your power. Be assured. Do not be precipitate in assenting before you apply the natural rule. On the other side, if a man is anxious about desire, lest it fail in its purpose and miss its end, and with respect to the avoidance of things, lest he should fall into that which he would avoid, I will first kiss him, because he throws away the things about which others are in a flutter, and their fears, and employs his thoughts about his own affairs and his own condition. Then I shall say to him, "If you do not choose to desire that which you will fall to obtain, nor to attempt to avoid that into which you will fall, desire nothing which belongs to others, nor try to avoid any of the things which are not in your power. If you do not observe this rule, you must of necessity fall in your desires and fall into that which you would avoid. What is the difficulty here? Where is there room for the words, how will it be, and how will it turn out, and will this happen or that? Now is not that which will happen independent of the will? Yes. And the nature of good and of evil, is it not in the things which are within the power of the will? Yes. Chapter 11, About Purity. Some persons raise a question whether the social feeling is contained in the nature of man. And yet I think that these same persons would have no doubt that love of purity is certainly contained in it, and that if man is distinguished from other animals by anything, he is distinguished by this. When, then, we see any other animal cleaning itself, we are accustomed to speak of the act with surprise, and to add that the animal is acting like a man. And, on the other hand, if a man blames an animal for being dirty, straightway, as if we were making an excuse for it, we say that, of course, the animal is not a human creature. So we suppose that there is something superior in man, and that we first receive it from the gods. For, since the gods, by their nature, are pure and free from corruption, so far as men approach them by reason, so far do they cling to purity and to a love of purity. But since it is impossible that man's nature can be altogether pure, being mixed of such materials, reason is applied, as far as it is possible, and reason endeavors to make human nature love. The first, then, and highest purity is that which is in the soul, and we say the same of impurity. Now, you could not discover the impurity of the soul as you could discover that of the body, but as to the soul, what else could you find in it than that which makes it filthy in respect to the acts which are her own? Now, the acts of the soul are movement toward an object or movement from it, desire, aversion, preparation, design, assent. What then is it which, in these acts, makes the soul filthy and impure? Nothing else than her own bad judgments. Consequently, the impurity of the soul is the soul. 12. On Attention. When you have remitted your attention for a short time, do not imagine this, that you will recover it when you choose. But let this thought be present to you, that in consequence of the fault committed today, your affairs must be in a worse condition for all that follows. For first, and what causes most trouble, a habit of not attending is formed in you, then a habit of deferring your attention, and continually, from time to time, you drive away, by deferring it, the happiness of life, proper behavior, the being and living conformably to nature. If then the procrastination of attention is profitable, the complete omission of attention is more profitable. But if it is not profitable, why do you not maintain your attention constant? Today I choose to play. Well then, ought you not to play with attention? I choose to sing. What then hinders you from doing so with attention? Is there any part of life expected to which attention does not extend? For will you do it worse by using attention and better by not attending at all? And what else of things in life is done better by those who do not use attention? Does he who works in wood work better by not attending to it? Does the captain of a ship manage it better by not attending? And is any of the smaller acts done better by inattention? Do you not see that when you have let your mind loose, it is no longer in your power to recall it, either to propriety or to modesty or to moderation, but you do everything that comes into your mind in obedience to your inclinations? To what things, then, ought I to attend? First, to those general principles, and to have them in readiness, and without them, not to sleep, not to rise, not to drink, not to eat. Chapter 13. Against or to those who readily tell their own affairs. When a man has seemed to us to have talked with simplicity about his own affairs, how is it that, at last, we are ourselves also induced to discover to him our own secrets, and we think this to be candid behavior? In the first place, because it seems unfair for a man to have listened to the affairs of his neighbor, and not to communicate to him also, in turn, our own affairs. Next, because we think that we shall not present to them the appearance of candid men when we are silent about our own affairs. Indeed, men are often accustomed to say, I have told you all my affairs. Will you tell me nothing of your own? Where is this done? Besides, we have also this opinion that we can safely trust him who has already told us his own affairs. For the notion rises in our mind that this man could never divulge our affairs, because he would be cautious that we also should not divulge his. In this way also the incautious are caught by the soldiers at Rome. A soldier sits by you in a common dress and begins to speak ill of Caesar. Then you, as if you had received a pledge of his fidelity by his having begun the abuse, utter yourself also what you think, and then you're carried off in chains. Something of this kind happens to us generally. Now, as this man has confidently entrusted his affairs to me, shall I also do so to any man whom I meet? For when I have heard, I keep silence, if I am of such a disposition. But he goes forth and tells all men what he has heard. Then, if I hear what has been done, if I be a man like him, I resolve to be revenged. I divulge what he has told me. I both disturb others and am disturbed myself. This has been The Discourses of Epictetus by Epictetus, narrated by Russell Newton. Please be sure to visit Amazon.com or Audible.com for more information on this book and the author. With an eclectic collection of water cooler knowledge, inspirational stories, and motivational thoughts from some of the newest audiobooks on the market, this has been the Voice Overwork Podcast, brought to you by Newton Media Group, a family of creative services.